Do you remember a time when sleeping on the floor with your friends wouldn't have been considered weird? The management of this website invites you to a new dimension in podcasting, an experience so fun it can only be compared to a childhood sleepover. It's not just about horror.
Tom Atkins proves that any man is leading man material.
It's not just about action.
If you're going to rank Van Damme movies...
Yeah, it's up there.
I'd put it top five.
It's not just about comedy.
There's no other person in the world that loves Weekend at Bernie's more than you.
It's not just about thrillers.
It occurred to me that Cruising is like the most awkward sleepover movie ever.
It's not just about science fiction.
You put your chin to your chest and you're like, you're so nervous. We're all going to die.
It's about nostalgia. Can you survive the Saturday night movie sleepover? It's not a movie. It's a podcast about movies.
You can follow Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers at SaturdayNightMovieSleepovers.com on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and just about everywhere you can listen to podcasts.
Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm excited for this week's show because I'm joined for the very first time. You know her, you love her. Please welcome to the show, Michelle Egan. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Patrick. Hey, everybody.
What's we up? Are talking about one of your very favorite movies.
Yes, we are.
This week. It is Junesploitation. It is remake day, the day that this episode comes out, and that is not an accident. We deliberately put remake day so that we could talk about Cape Fear from 1962, as well as Martin Scorsese's 1991 remake of Cape Fear. So I'm excited to talk about both of those because I had never seen the 62 version.
I can't believe you had never seen it yet.
I know. There's so many movies I haven't seen, and every time I say I haven't seen one, people are like, oh, I can't believe you haven't seen that. Like, oh, there's only so much time in a day, and I have to watch Hard Ticket to Hawaii over and over again. So, you know,
I'm not like in a bad way, but because this movie is so freaking great, and you should have seen it by now.
I should have. I apologize. I knew the 91 version very well. I was surprised at how much I remembered it, because I know it had been a few years since I had watched it, but... revisiting it, I pretty much knew it by heart, so I must have seen it a lot of times back in the day.
I think I did too, yeah. I think I saw it a lot before I even saw the original too.
It may have tainted my experience, but we will get to that. Just a reminder to everyone, it is Junesploitation, our month-long celebration of exploitation and genre movies. Go to fthismovie.com and click on the Junesploitation tab. And read all about what it is. Every day we do a different theme and people watch movies from that day. You can comment on the site and talk about what you've been watching, or a lot of people have just been posting to Twitter with the hashtag Junesploitation. It's been a lot of fun to see what everyone is watching. And so that's most of what I've seen lately. But before I talk about anything that I've watched lately, let me ask you, Michelle, have you seen anything good lately?
I have actually. Let me see what I want to start with. So my Dollar General, I found out, has like some really great movies for sale, like on DVD and Blu-ray. And so I picked up a couple of things the last couple of weeks, one of which was Last of the Red Hot Lovers.
Okay.
Have you ever seen that?
Neil Simon. I know the play, yes. But I've never seen the movie.
It's really good. I really enjoyed it because I like those kind of settings anyway, like, you know, based on a play. So it's all mostly set in one location, real talky-talky, but great actors. And like, it's so funny. Like the whole, do you know the like setup of it then?
I think so.
In it.
I feel like it's Alan. Is it Alan Arkin?
Alan Arkin. That's right. Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, and he wants to, he's not really a great character because he basically wants to cheat on his wife. And so the whole movie is like him taking three different girls up to his mother's apartment, you know, with the intent of, you know, sleeping with them. But each of them is like kind of a different level of crazy in a way. And so it's just him trying to deal with these Strange Women. It's a great movie.
Okay.
You should check it out. What did you watch?
Oh, all my stuff has been for Junesploitation. Well, okay, not all of it, because I did. We did take the kids to see The Secret Life of Pets 2.
Aww.
Which, you know, they liked. And I thought the original Secret Life of Pets was just okay, and I guess I would say the same for the sequel. The one thing that I sort of admired about the sequel is its willingness to not be about anything, really. It's just three separate little stories. It's almost as if they made a Secret Life of Pets animated series and just combined three episodes and kind of intercut them all. There's no real overarching theme, really. There's a little bit about sort of getting over your fears, but not much. The voice cast is charming, and, you know, the funniest stuff in the movie to me is when they're goofing on things that animals actually do. Once they start going on crazy adventures and acting like superheroes, I'm way less interested. I think it's way funnier when it's just a cat trying to wake up her owner by swatting her in the face over and over again. So some of that, like, behavior that they observe and then sort of include in the animation, I think, is really funny. And that was what originally sold me on the first movie, because it had a really funny trailer. Like, here's what your pets do when you're gone. They listen to metal music. And this movie doesn't really do any of that. It just, it's fine. It, you know, it's a movie that I wasn't, like, I didn't feel like I was damaging the kids by exposing them to it, but I don't think they're going to really take anything away from it the way that they would, say, one of the better Pixar movies.
I never saw the first one.
You're fine. You know, it's cute at best.
I like cute. I like this one.
Yeah, cute's good. I feel like I probably liked this one a little bit better because it's trying to do less and is willing to just be kind of a silly little movie. And I'm on board for that.
Always. Well, let me see. What else? Oh, I've been watching a lot of Westerns still because of Pure Cinema got me on the Western train.
Oh, yeah.
I got that. There's like a 4-pack that they recommended on the show. A 4-pack Blu-ray that had like different older Westerns that I had never even heard of. And so I watched two of them so far. One was The Last Hard Men. That one was very cool. But the one I liked the most probably was Butch and Sundance, the early days, where it's got, obviously it comes before the 69 film. It has Tom Berenger as Butch Cassidy and William Catt as the Sundance Kid. And it's kind of them, you know, meeting up for the first time and going on their first couple of robberies before there's like they do a train robbery at the end. It's very funny. It's a very good kind of like palate cleanser for all of the other like gritty Westerns, you know, that I've been watching that are just like so down and brutal and violent. And this one was just Butch and Sundance, you know, them having fun together. And Tom Berenger and William Catt are like so perfect in the roles. I think Tom Berenger looks kind of weirdly like Paul Newman, like a younger Paul Newman in this. So. Very good. Have you seen that one?
I have not. It's that is good casting. I bought that same 4-pack, I think, yeah, after maybe their first New Beverly episode, their first calendar episode, where because Butch and Sundance was playing, the early days was playing, when the theater first reopened, and I had never seen it, and I think I thought it was a made-for-TV movie and just put no stock in it, and then to hear them talk about it, it was like, no, this is secretly really good. And,
it is.
Yeah, and the 4-pack was like $8 or something, so I and bought it. And then when they were talking about The Last Hard Men, I was like, oh, I got to seek this movie out. And when Brian said, it's actually on this 4-pack with these other movies, I thought, you know, it's so exciting when you realize you own something you didn't realize you owned.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to buy it. I already have it, but I have not watched any of the movies on that disc yet.
I definitely recommend those, too. Yeah, they're good. Right. And I watched them both on the same day. So
ooh,
I watched Last
nice.
Hard Men first, and then I did Butch and Sundance. And I kind of recommend doing it that way. Like I said, it's a good palate cleanser.
Okay.
Just a fun Western with, you know, great cast. It's really funny, like good, like little stunt bits that they do. Like when they first meet in the bar, and Sundance is like cheating at cards and gets into a little scuffle, and there's this one part where he just like goes flying out of a window. And I was just like, I'm so in for this movie the whole time.
I love me some William Catt. Yeah, no, I definitely need to check it out. Do you have a favorite Western on the, like, from the kick that you've been on lately? Is there one that stands out above all the others? Is like, this is the prime discovery.
I just also recently watched High Plains Drifter.
Okay.
Which I loved.
Yeah.
I loved that one. Didn't really like Eastwood's character in that, but you know, obviously you're not really supposed to.
Right.
But yeah, that one was great. I've got two more actually that I just got from Netflix yesterday. So also from the show. So I'm going to be watching those. I got Seraphim Falls and Hanny Calder. So I'm excited to dig into those.
Hanny Calder, I love. I've never seen Seraphim Falls, but it sounded good when they were talking about it.
Yeah, I think I've seen a little bit of Hanny Calder. Like, I remember, like, that opening scene that they were talking about. Yeah. I might have stopped watching it, too, because of that.
Right.
But I do remember that. Good times.
Okay, what else? Oh, I watched, for Cars Day, we watched The Gumball Rally from 1976, which is one of these big ensemble cross-country road race movies that I didn't realize is a subgenre that I really like, but every time I watch one of these movies, I'm like, oh, that was super entertaining. Even something like Rat Race, which isn't super great, I can totally watch anytime it's on because the cast is fun and the premise is so simple. There aren't any huge stars in Gumball Rally. Gary Busey is in there. The hook for me was Joanne Nail from Switchblade Sisters, so I was excited to see her in anything else. But the star of the show is Raul Julia, playing an eccentric Italian driver who has to stop every time he sees a pretty woman and go flirt with her, which gets in the way of them winning the race. But it is just super entertaining. I recorded it off of TCM. I know there's a disc from Warner Archive, which I don't own, but you know, it's a mad world light, but really, really entertaining and fun.
I have not seen that either.
worth checking out. Maybe the next time there's a Warner Archive sale or something.
Oh, they put it out? Cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, my next one you're going to really like, I think, and I realized this was perfect when I saw your profile picture pop up here on Skype. I watched Phantom of the Paradise for the first time.
This is so exciting.
I've been meaning to watch it forever. I've had the Blu-ray like in my Amazon cart for so long, but I honestly didn't think that I would like it at all, because I was like, musical, usually my thing sometimes, but sometimes not really. So I hadn't really, like, you know, gone for it yet. Then Shudder put it up. So I was like, all right, fine. I'm going to watch it. And I freaking loved it.
Yay!
Freaking loved it so much. I don't even really have any specifics, you know, to why I loved it. It's just one of those movies where I'm just watching it. I'm like, I am so happy. I am so loving everything about this right now.
I have the same kind of relationship to it, because I remember watching it one year. I had some friends over and we put it on, and my friend Doug turned to me and said, why do you like this? And he wasn't saying it in like an angry way, like he hates it. He just wasn't connecting with it and didn't understand why it's like one of my absolute favorite movies. And I can't even articulate why I like it. You know, it's not any one thing. I mean, the songs are good, sure, and the performances are fun, but it's not like there's one thing that I can point to and say, oh, because I really like this single aspect or these two aspects. It's just
the whole feeling of it.
Exactly.
I don't know what it is exactly.
Yeah. It is. It's like the sum total of the thing is so perfect that, I just caught we just caught a screening of it a couple months ago. They showed it here in Chicago, and Garrett Graham was there and talked bit about the making of it. And
he was amazing.
He was absolutely amazing. Yeah. He was originally
that was probably my favorite part.
Yeah. Him. He was Beef forever. Yeah, I love the music so much. Like, I could listen to that soundtrack every day of my life. It's a perfect movie. I love it.
That was one of my first thoughts, too, is like, okay, I just want to hear this music, like, all day, every day from now on.
Yeah.
I love that scene where Jessica Harper is auditioning. I love that song so much.
Special to me, where she does the Jessica Harper dance.
The Jessica Harper dance, is that what it's called?
That's what I have dubbed it. It's this. It's as she finishes the song, she does this kind of twirl, and then sort
she
of
flourishes out. Yeah,
yeah, and she kind of gallops out of the frame in such a way, and it is the greatest thing. There are many GIFs of it floating around the internet, and it never fails to make me smile.
Yes, well, I am very happy to be in the camp now of people who I've seen and love Phantom of the Paradise, and I'm definitely going to be buying that Blu-ray now.
Yay!
Because I had to watch it on Shudder, which means I had to watch it on my computer screen. And I was like, I want to see it big and loud now.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It definitely deserves to be played very loud. What have I seen? Oh, I watched, not for Junesploitation, unrelated. Erica and I watched Always Be My Maybe on Netflix, which is the new romantic comedy with Ali Wong and Randall Park. I watched
it. Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, so I knew that there would be a Keanu sighting. I didn't realize he plays himself in the movie.
Oh, he does.
Yeah. and plays such an exaggerated version of himself, like just the douchiest actor. But he's very, very funny. And the movie itself is cute. You know, there's not much more I could say about it. The two leads are very charming. And it's funny enough. You know, there's so few good romantic comedies being made these days that when you see one that's even pretty decent, it's kind of like a little miracle. And I'm glad that, you know, it's on Netflix and a lot of people can watch it. But for half the movie, I sat there watching it thinking, boy, if they had just put this in theaters, I feel like they could have made some of the same Crazy Rich Asians money. I mean, that movie made so much money because it was serving an audience that so rarely gets to be represented on screen. And Always Be My Maybe does it very casually. You know, the movie is not necessarily about them being Asian, even though their culture certainly factors in to who they are and some of the commonalities that they have between them, although they're two different nationalities. So part of me kind of wishes that it had been given a chance in theaters. But again, I'm glad that it's on Netflix and everybody can watch it and watch Keanu Reeves walk in halfway through the movie and steal it out from under everyone.
I've watched that scene. That's all I've seen of it because people keep posting that scene of him. But I do like Ali Wong, so I might give that one a shot.
She's good, and she's not an actor, right? She's a stand-up comic.
She's a comedian.
Yeah. So she does a good job for somebody who's not primarily an actor.
Cool.
Yeah.
That was it for me, really.
That was it for you? I feel like I had one more that I wanted to talk about, but I know.
I mean, I could talk about School Spirit, but I wouldn't have anything good to say. So
I'm very familiar with the cover box, but I've never seen it.
You don't have to.
No.
I found it on Prime and the cover kind of got me and I was like, I'll give it a chance. And I was like, no, this isn't really worth it.
I will mention, because I know that you two are a Shockwaves listener and so you can appreciate the mythos behind this movie. For Slasher Day, one of the movies that we watched was Doom Asylum, which is hotly debated on the Shockwaves podcast.
I love Doom Asylum. I'm just saying that right now.
Okay. I think I'm more Team Elric than I am Team Turek. Like, I really liked, oh God, what's her name? Not Charlotte, not Kristen Davis.
Oh.
Patty Mullen.
I thought it was Kristen Davis.
Kristen Davis is in the movie, but I'm talking about Patty Mullen, whose credits are basically only this and Frankenhooker. She plays sort of the female lead of the movie. I really liked her. I wish she made more movies. Obviously, she's not like Frankenhooker levels of great in this movie, but for what it is, it's totally fine. I think if I had seen it when I was like 10 or 11, I would have loved it. But it's it's just such a weird movie. It's so jokey. I don't even totally understand the mythology of the killer in terms of how they set that up and everything, but I guess it doesn't matter. It is what it is. I had fun watching it, but I don't know that it's a movie that I'll come back to very often the way I do so many other 80s horror movies.
Okay, well, when I say that I love Doom Asylum, what I meant was I was in the right mood to totally enjoy this movie when I watched it, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm ready for something just fun, turn my brain off, and I was like, what is this? This is amazing. In a bad, good way. And I enjoy it, so...
And I did also just pick up, Scared Stiff. Is that what it's called? The director's other big movie, right?
I didn't know that was the same director, but yeah, I've heard of that one.
I think it is. Arrow just put it out, and I want to say it's the same director, but now I'm not positive, so I'm going to try to look it up as we're talking here. But I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. Yeah, right? Richard Friedman is the director, and I didn't realize he made some movies that I've actually seen, but, Scared Stiff. Oh, he made before Doom Asylum. He made that actually 1 year before Doom Asylum.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What else did he do? Let me see.
Street Night is the one that I was looking at that I was like, I've definitely seen Street Night. He was just a producer maybe on Street Night, but he made Phantom of the Mall, which I've
seen. Don't know that one.
Yeah. He made that the year after Doom Asylum, and that actually got a theatrical release. Pauly Shore has a small role in Phantom of the Mall.
Okay. I'm in.
You could double it with Phantom of the Paradise if you wanted to, because they're both basically Phantom of the Blank movies. Rip-offs of Phantom of the Opera.
I would say, is it a Phantom of the Opera story, then?
It is. Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge. But it's the kind of movie that I think you probably have to watch on YouTube, because a DVD may have come out, but it's long out of print. There's no Blu-ray. So it's a movie that's kind of hard to see. Yeah. Anyway. All right, so let's talk about Cape Fear. I had teased this at the start of the show, but I do feel like I did myself a disservice by coming to the original so many years after being really familiar with the remake, because aside from the filmmaking on display and some of the performances, I found it hard to be... not surprised is the wrong word, but it was like... the original ended up playing out kind of exactly the way I expected it to play out. You know what I mean? It was like, oh, I knew all the beats already, and that should have gone the other way. I should have had that experience watching the remake and been like, oh, all they did was remake Cape Fear. But because I saw it in reverse, I was so familiar with the story already. But let me ask you, what is it about the original Cape Fear that makes it one of your favorite movies?
It's one of those movies where, you know how you have your favorites, and then you have those movies that, you know, will always be your favorites. Even if other things change over the years, there's ones that always stay. And for some reason, Cape Fear has always been one of those movies for me. I don't even remember, like, how I came to it or how I first saw it. Probably, like, on TCM or something one time because of the actors involved, Gregory Peck, Robert Mitchum, you know, two big powerhouse actors. I was like, all right, cool. I'm in. Let's watch this. And I love the subtlety of it. And I love Mitchum's performance, I think, most of all. To me, he is probably the scariest villain in film history for me in this movie.
You like him better? Do you think he's scarier here than in something like Night of the Hunter?
In a different way.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't even know. Okay, and also J. Lee Thompson as a director.
It surprised me. I forgot that he directed it, and when his name popped up, because I've seen so many canon movies that, like, when his name popped up, I was like, the guy from all the later era, you know, Death Wish movies, and, you know, he worked a lot of canon late in his life, and so I forgot that at one point he was making respectable movies like Cape Fear.
He made Guns of Navarone,
yeah,
too, before this with Gregor Peck, which is how he came to direct this. And Gregor Peck was actually the producer, so it was his idea to adapt this book, The Executioners, by John McDonald, which is what the story is based on. So this movie happened because of Gregory Peck,
pretty much.
And I love him for it.
This started out life as a Hitchcock movie, correct?
I think so, yeah. He was originally supposed to do it, but
yeah.
I think I read on Wikipedia there was like a conflict of interest or something.
Oh.
Or differing views on how the movie should go. But I think Thompson was a perfect director for it, too. I mean, he worked with Hitchcock, so... And he very much has his sensibilities in mind when he was making this. So a lot of scenes, especially the like climactic scenes at the end on the river, very much feel like Hitchcock.
Yeah.
So I would say if people are a fan, obviously, of Hitchcock, definitely check this out if you haven't before.
It definitely has the feel of a Hitchcock movie. Between the photography, the Bernard Herrmann score, which is amazing.
Yes.
But also its willingness to be really dark without ever, you know, because of the time in which it was made and because of the standards of the time, they can't explicitly say some of the things that are implied in the movie, but even what Mitchum keeps implying, what he's going to do to Gregory Peck's mm-hmm. daughter. I mean, it's like, oh, that is dark. And
yeah.
that's the kind of thing that Hitchcock would have gone for, I think.
That's part of why, I like this, not to talk about the remake first, but why I kind of prefer it, the remake, is it gets the point across without being so, you know, in your face about it. And that makes it just a little bit more scary to me because you don't know exactly what's going to happen. You don't know what this guy is capable of.
Well, it's interesting, and we might as well just talk about them in tandem rather than one after the other, because yeah, there's all this stuff about the remake that I have to bring up. Like,
yeah,
I think the pacing of Max Cady and sort of the slower reveal of who he really is or how dark he really is works a lot better in the original, because as I was mm-hmm. watching the remake, I was alarmed at how early in the film he attacks Ileana Douglas. I mean, it's like within the first half hour. And it's really brutal. I mean, it's like, it's hard to watch. And so it's almost like, where do you go from there? If you've already revealed, you know, just how fucked up Max Cady can be or what he's capable of. And it's like, how do we can't top that, you know, not that I want the movie to top it, but I feel like it tips its hand so early on, whereas in the original, it's a lot slower in terms of, like, maybe he's all talk. Okay, he's just showing up places. The dog died, but, well, we can't prove it. And it goes pretty far into the movie before he does finally attack the woman off screen, you know, but still we know what happens. To me, that makes more sense as sort of a gradual buildup of who he is.
I think so, too. And, you know, a big thing is not just Katie's character, but also the Sam Bowden character and the, you know, morality problem that he has to deal with this whole situation. It's different in the movie, both movies. Like in the first one, he wasn't, you know, really involved with Cady at all. He was just a witness to, you know, previous crime that he had committed. And in the remake, he was his lawyer. And so they have to give all the characters flaws in the remake. Whereas in the original, it's just like this perfect, happy family that, you know, this monster is coming into and trying to destroy, and just how they're going to handle that. What are they going to do? Are they going to be able to keep their morality intact and do the right thing for themselves by the end when they're really pushed to the limit?
Yeah, it is. It's a totally different kind of dynamic. Part of me is a little bit more interested in some of what the remake does. And I know in the remake, you know, some of it is because Scorsese wasn't particularly interested in directing it. He had to be talked into directing it. If Wikipedia is to be believed, it started out life as a Steven Spielberg movie and eventually became a Scorsese film. And he was not really interested in directing it because he didn't really like the Sam Bowden character. He didn't like that dynamic that Bowden was essentially without flaw. And so some of that was changed in the development of the screenplay. There was something like more than 20 drafts of the screenplay. And in the development, they tried to give the characters a lot more nuance and flaws. And so while the original is interesting in the way that it's like, hey, what happens when this totally normal, totally happy American family has their lives disrupted by this monster who appears out of nowhere and sets his sights on them, you know? And it's the dynamic of a lot of horror movies, right? I mean, go ahead.
No, just saying like, you know, just what would you do?
Right.
Basically is right. The question here.
Right. I mean, I was listening to the History of Horror podcast with Quentin Tarantino, and he's talking about Halloween, and he says, you know, what makes it scary is we don't know what makes Michael Myers sets his sights on Laurie Strode and say her and just become so singularly focused on killing her. And we know why Max Cady sets his sights on the Bowden family, but it's not. They didn't really do anything wrong, you know, and so right. It's not really fair that he's chosen to done that. He just blames them, or he blames Sam Bowden for going to prison, but Sam Bowden was doing the right thing. There's a little bit of me that's interested in what the remake does, which, you know, has the Sam Bowden character, this time played by Nick Nolte. He's in the wrong, kind of. He was Katie's lawyer and withheld evidence because he knew, you know, in his heart that Cady was guilty. And so he didn't do his duty as a lawyer, and Cady went to prison as a result. Now, it's like Cady is a monster. Cady more than likely was guilty.
He absolutely was.
Right. And so it's like he should have gone to jail, but at the same time, he has a point in being angry at Sam Bowden. You know, it's like he's a monster. I'm not defending him at all, but he has a point because what Nick Nolte did was technically wrong. And so
that is the problem. That's the main problem I have with the remake.
Oh, see, I think that's so interesting.
No, I get it. And yeah, that's totally right. I just can't get behind it, you know, at all. Like, so the report apparently that Sam buried, you know, from the prosecution was that Katie's victim was promiscuous. Okay, she was 16 for one thing,
right.
And also, who cares?
Oh, for sure.
So,
it's disgusting to think that would have affected the case. Absolutely.
And that scene with Nick Nolte and Jodan Baker when they're talking about that, and Jodan is just like, "Oh, so not everybody is entitled to a good defense? Is that what you're saying?" So he's shaming Sam, and I'm like, "Okay, yes." Legally, that was wrong. I don't really care still. I just can't with a character like that, you know? That's just my personal thing. Obviously, yeah, it was right to give him that flaw and to actually make it be partly his fault for
right,
Katie
right.
being in prison. Whereas, you know, Sam in the original was just a witness, obviously. He was just doing his duty.
Right.
And, yeah. I'm very passionate about that. I hate that part of that movie so much.
Interesting. Oh, I didn't realize that. See, that's something
that really bothers me. I'm like, really? That's what you're going to focus on? Like, that she was promiscuous? Like, especially, you know, now, obviously, but...
Right. Even in 91. Yeah, again, it's disgusting to think that would have affected the case in any significant way. But I will say that there is one of the issues that perhaps I have with the remake is the fact that I don't especially like Sam Bowden or his wife Lee Bowden. I like Juliette Lewis. Like, not just her performance. I like her character. I like who she is. I don't particularly like the two older Bowens.
Yeah. Juliette Lewis as Danny, she's probably the most interesting character.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. How do you feel about the change to the scene in the school?
It's uncomfortable. Very much different.
Yeah, that did surprise me, watching the original. Again, being familiar with the remake, watching the original, it's much more of just a straightforward attack. Yeah.
You expected, like, a confrontation.
Yeah, he just terrorizes her. And
it's not even really him, though, I don't think. I think she was running from him, and, you know, they revealed that it was just probably a guy that was working at the school. So it was just her fear of him, I think, that drives that scene.
Right.
And then when she runs into him at the end, that's kind of terrifying to me. But yeah, they go way over the top for the remake in that scene.
I was reading, too, because I was trying to remember if Robert De Niro had been nominated for Best Actor, and he was.
For this?
For Cape Fear, yeah. Which I think it's the only time he was nominated for Best Actor in a movie that didn't get a Best Picture nomination, for whatever that's worth. But he was nominated, so I was looking at the list of nominations that the movie received. One of the nominations that it received was an MTV Movie Award for Best Kiss, Robert De Niro and Juliette Lewis. Is that not the creepiest thing you've ever heard?
No, that's so not good.
No, like, guys, come on. that's not... it didn't win. I don't know what won in 1991. I don't know, maybe something from Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves or something. But Best Kiss is very disturbing.
It wasn't that, like, I think I read somewhere that that wasn't like a planned thing, like for him to stick his thumb in her mouth. She just kind of went with it.
The story is that the entire scene is basically improvised.
Okay. Yeah.
They did it three times.
And you can kind of feel it, too, in her reactions to it, where she's kind of like, oh, okay, well, what? Okay, but I'm just going to have to go with it, I think.
The list of actresses who reportedly were either offered that role and turned it down or were considered for that role is bananas. It is so...
Really?
It is anybody you could think of. Who was anybody at that time? I know Winona Ryder was one. Jennifer Connelly was one. Drew Barrymore claims to have auditioned and blown the audition. But it goes all the way to, like, Nicole Eggert, Alyssa Milano, like, people who were just on TV at the time. And I don't think I realized that I knew Juliette Lewis at the time, because I had already seen Christmas Vacation, but I didn't put it together that it was the same girl. So to me, she was this total unknown, and she just knocked me on my ass. I thought she was so good in that movie.
Yeah. I forget that this was from like early like 91.
Yeah.
Like before any of the other stuff that you really come to know her for.
Right.
Yeah. She kills it.
Yeah. I remember the summer that Terminator 2 Judgment Day came out as being one of the very best movie summers of my life. My brother took my friend and me on opening day, first show, first day, and we sat in the theater, our eyes glued to the screen. The audience was going nuts, standing up and cheering for every cool thing that happened in that movie. It's one of the best movie experiences of my life. And speaking of summer movies and speaking of sequels, that's right, I'm talking about the Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers 2019 Summer of Sequels. Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers is one of my favorite movie podcasts because it's got hosts Dion and Blake hanging out, talking about the kinds of movies that I grew up loving, movies that you used to watch during sleepovers. But they talk about more recent movies too, but this summer they're devoting their entire summer specifically to some of the biggest sequels to some of the best loved franchises of all time. Their Terminator show is already up. And it's really, really fun. They don't just talk about the movie, although they talk about it in the way that they usually do, which is like funny and smart and entertaining. It's not all highbrow and pretentious. It's the way you hang out and talk about movies with your friends. You know, if you like our show, they talk about movies in a very similar way. But they don't just talk about the movie Terminator 2 on the episode. They're talking about the Guns N' Roses song. They're talking about the Universal ride that was spun off of it, the 3D ride. They're talking about the toy line, which is, you know, a toy line for a rated R movie, which is pretty unheard of. They cover the whole Terminator 2 experience as only they can. I can't wait to find out what other sequels they're going to be doing in this very special summer series. In the past, they've talked about all kinds of movies from Raiders of the Lost Ark to Scream, to Rear Window, to Cruising, to The Warriors, to Adventures in Babysitting, to The Karate Kid. One of my absolute favorites, the Star Wars Holiday Special. They talk about all different kinds of movies in that really, really fun, nostalgic way. And it's just a blast to listen to. You guys should all check out Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers, especially this summer, because they're going to be talking about some really, really cool sequels. I'm excited to hear what they say. Make sure that you check out Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers at SaturdayNightMovieSleepovers.com, or just go right ahead and subscribe like I did. You can listen on Stitcher, on Apple Podcasts, on iTunes. I just went ahead and subscribed, and so should you. It's the Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers 2019 Summer of Sequels. Check it out. How do you feel about De Niro's Max Cady versus Robert Mitchum's?
Okay.
And with a heavy sigh.
Okay. Obviously, love Robert De Niro. He's too much for me.
Yeah.
In this movie.
Yeah.
Like I said, one of my favorite things about the original is the subtlety, and yeah, sometimes subtlety is overrated. Sometimes you just got to go for it. But Mitchum is just so much scarier to me. Just with a look in his face. One of my favorite scenes is when he's with the drifter girl, Diane Taylor, right before he attacks her. And that he's just, the camera just follows him, and he goes to the end of the bed and just, he gives her a look, and he's bawling one hand into a fist, you know, and just from the look on her face, you just kind of go, oh shit.
And
he has the charming, like, Southern boy thing about him with the way he talks in the movie, but you know, the things he says are just crazy. Even though this movie, like you said, couldn't explicitly really say what the movie was about, that Max Cady was a rapist and he wanted to rape Sam's daughter. That was his whole, you know, motive in the movie. Even though he couldn't say anything like that, the dialogue that they give him. Especially, there's another scene that I love where Sam goes to meet Max Cady and, you know, to offer him money to go away. And he tells that story of what he did to his wife when he finds out that she left him. And just the matter of fact way that he talks about anything in this movie, just, it chills me to the bone. It really does. And it just kind of proves that, you know, a truly scary villain can just be a human with no morals, completely unapologetic about, you know, who he is and what he is. And that's what Max Cady is in the original to me.
And in the remake, he's just a little too Foghorn Leghorn cartoonish, over the top.
Yes, he's so comical. So comically evil that I can't believe it, you know? They give him, you know, all the prison tats or whatever, and his voice. He does do kind of interesting thing with the accent. I don't know. What'd you think of that?
It works, yeah. But again, it's like sometimes I couldn't forget that I was watching Robert De Niro. When I watch Robert Mitchum, I feel like I forget that I'm watching Robert Mitchum and I'm watching Max Cady, this actual person. And sometimes when I'm watching the remake, and I like the remake, but I watch it feeling like, oh, I'm watching Robert De Niro do a bunch of actor affects.
Yeah. And especially towards at the end, the scene on the whole thing on the boat.
Oh, yeah.
It just goes insane.
By the time he's speaking in tongues and stuff, I'm like, oh, wow, they've gone all in on this
tongues
movie.
And singing while he's drowning to death, and you're just like, oh my god, like, he doesn't seem like a real person to
right.
me. He seems like an exaggerated version of, you know, this is the person you should be scared of.
Well, and I like that one of the things that I like about the remake is just how overheated it is, and how, like, I don't think Scorsese was still on cocaine by the time he made this movie, but if you told me that he made this movie on cocaine, I would believe you.
Yes.
Because it is a wild movie. And I kind of like that he looked at the original, said, okay, I see what they did. And as you said, it's pretty subtle. It's kind of slow burn. What if I went the exact opposite direction and just move the camera like a crazy person and put in all these optical effects? And
he can do everything that Thompson couldn't back then.
Right. And just tell everyone to dial their performances way the fuck up and make this insane overheated movie so that by the end of the movie, when a boat has been completely destroyed and the villain is sinking into the water, shouting in tongues, you're like, yeah, that's of a piece with the rest of this movie. That's kind of where I expected this to go.
Then what's your take on, Mitchum versus De Niro?
I think they're playing such different versions of the same character. I think Mitchum is playing an animal that is going to like circle you for an hour before it makes its move and attacks you. Mm-hmm. I think he is sort of much more threatening because of how slow he plays it. Whereas De Niro, I feel like, is more like a jackal or a hyena where he's just going to rip you apart the second he can.
Laughing like a hyena in the movie theater.
at Problem Child, no less. Which I will admit, between that and hearing Larry Karaszewski on a podcast recently, I was like, I need to rewatch Problem Child.
I actually, like, a couple of weeks ago, I saw someone else had it on Blu-ray, and I was like, I did not know Problem Child was on Blu-ray. I'm going to go buy this right now. And someone brought up, like, that was one of my favorite parts of the Cape Fear, was that they're watching Problem Child in the movie theater. I was like, oh, that's right.
And Max Cady loves it.
I'll also say Problem Child is a good rewatch if you're going to do it.
All right.
I'm totally... I used to watch both of those all the time.
I know I've seen the second one, but I'm not as familiar with it. I might have only seen it once.
Oh, I like them both a lot. You should definitely watch them both.
I have a real soft spot for early 90s Universal, speaking of Cape Fear, like Child's Play 2. I don't even necessarily love Child's Play 2, but it's early 90s Universal, and it makes me think of... all the movies I loved during that time. So I have a real soft spot for it.
I adore Child's Play 2. What's wrong with you?
I like Child's Play 2, but it's not... I am just such a fan of the original Child's Play that...
I am too. There's a Child's Play poster behind me right now.
Is there really?
Yes.
That's awesome.
That's my favorite horror movie of all time.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
It is.
That is so cool. All right, wait. Quick digression. Rank the Child's Play movies.
Oh, my. Like from favorite...
From
least
favorite to least favorite.
They pretty much go in order.
Oh, okay.
I would say pretty much. I would say one and two are my favorites.
Okay.
Then probably Bride. Then three. Then probably Cult. I really liked Cult.
I like Cult.
I gotta say.
Yeah.
That'd be a toss-up between Cult and Curse. And then Seed is growing on me.
Yeah.
Slowly but surely over the years, so it's still in last place, but I like all of them for different reasons.
Okay. I think 3 is the only one that I'm not crazy about. It is the one I've seen the least also, so maybe I need to rewatch it, but I feel like that's the only one that I'm kind of like, I could skip it, whereas I have stuff I like in all of the other ones.
Right. Okay, that was a fun digression.
It was a fun digression. I did not know that about Child's Play, so that's very exciting. But speaking of horror movies, let me ask you this question, because we were watching the remake. I was watching it with Erica, and she was freaking out at everything. She was terrified by so much of the movie, and she had seen it before, but I think she'd just forgotten a lot of it. Stuff like Joe Don Baker's fate and the stuff on the boat at the end of the movie, she just was really freaking out. And she said, this is scarier to me than any horror movie. And then she said, is this a horror movie? And I said, I don't know. I think most people would call this a thriller.
Right.
And then I read on Wikipedia, I think today, that Scorsese declined to be interviewed for Fangoria for the movie because this movie's not a horror movie. This is a thriller.
But, whereas I would say the original is a horror movie.
So what... that's what I'm getting at. Are these horror movies or are they thrillers? And what is the difference?
I don't really care about those kind of labels, to be honest with you.
I don't either. I'm just wondering what people think, because I have no idea.
Well, I wrote about the original Cape Fear for Wicked Horror a couple of years ago, actually, because I was just talking about some of my favorite black and white horror movies, and I was like, you know what? Cape Fear is totally horror to me, because Max Cady is a perfect villain. Plus, you only have to watch the first few seconds of the movie and hear Bernard Herrmann's score.
Yeah.
Like, that's total horror movie music right there.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know if you want to label it as horror. I like to, but thriller works too for both of them, I would say.
Yeah. I don't know. We were just debating what constitutes a horror movie versus what's a thriller, you know? And I know Silence of the Lambs is always the movie that gets brought up for that debate. Is it a thriller? Is it a horror movie? I feel pretty confident that that's a horror movie. But then she was saying,
call, like, a movie whatever you want to call a movie.
Yeah, I guess.
That's my feeling.
I guess.
If it's horror to you, like, if it scares you in some way, like Cape Fear does for me, like, it may not affect other people the same way, like, but I consider it to be a horror movie. I consider that a very scary story.
Yeah. How do you feel about all of the Scorsese theatrics in the remake?
Such as?
Just the crazy visual style of the movie, where he,
like, the fireworks?
Yeah, or just the way that the camera moves. This was his first use of widescreen, I read, which he had resisted because he didn't want his movies being shown on TV and being butchered as pan and scan, so he always would shoot 1.85, and then I guess by 1991 he thought that enough home video had come along that, you know, was showing stuff proper widescreen that he was willing to shoot this movie 2.39. But it just seems like he hadn't had a hit in a couple of years, probably since The Color of Money, and really seems to be like, okay, I'll take this as sort of a for-hire job, and seems like he really enjoyed taking Universal's money out for a drive and just making this wild-ass movie that, I don't, you know, it certainly feels like one of his movies, I think, and there are a lot of different themes that we could probably tie back to a lot of his other work, but in some ways it just feels like him, his version of a commercial movie.
You know, and on my last rewatch, I remember this being a lot more over the top and crazy. I felt a little less that this time for me. Like, maybe it's not as insane as I used to think it was.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think he takes full advantage, especially the last scene with on the boat with the storm. And he does a lot of really cool, like, specific shots, I think, of, Robert De Niro's eyes in the water as he's drowning. Like, that's kind of a horror movie type shot, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he does like the split diopter thing at the beginning, which is kind of unsettling, even though it's supposed to be like a moment between Nick Nolte and Jessica Lange, like while he's brushing his teeth or talking. They're talking about weird things anyway, but yeah, he does do certain things that do make the viewer feel very unsettled. Also, when De Niro is talking to Julie Lewis on the phone, hanging upside down.
Oh, and I then forgot looks, about that.
Yeah, and then he spins the camera around where he's right side up but still hanging upside down.
Yeah.
I think it just kind of adds to, I think it's supposed to add to Katie's character in a way, just unpredictable craziness all over the place.
There's a lot of really, like, kind of wacky, fun flourishes in the movie. I don't know. I enjoyed it on that level. But, you know, again, I also like the sort of stark, I won't say straightforwardness of the original, because the photography, the lighting in particular is very deliberate, you know, and it's really effective. I mean, it's one of my favorite uses of black and white that I've seen in quite some time. But it's just not as crazy stylish, you know.
And Thompson said, too, there's a feature on my Blu-ray that I watched. He said that he only saw the movie in black and white. You know, this was 62. He could have done color easily, right, but he said right. he only saw it in black and white. He thought color would ruin the mood of the story. And I agree with him because he really knocks it out with the shadows yeah. and the way he shoots through doorways, through the railings of the school whenever, you know, Laurie is running from Katie. Laurie Martin, sorry, is the actress's name.
Right.
And, yeah, so the black and white totally works. And he uses some of my favorite stuff is when Mitchum finally gets on the boat and it's all low angles and canted angles
yeah.
to really throw you off. It looks beautiful.
Yeah. No, it's a great looking movie. So where do you land on the remake overall? Is it a movie you like, or can you not even, is the original sort of too close to your heart?
I remember thinking like back in college when I had finally seen both of them, I used to think that this was one where the remake was just as good as, if not better than, the original. But the original is, like I said, is one of my favorites of all time. It's obviously become very important to me over the years, and I thought I hated the remake because of that, because it just did everything of opposite of what I loved about the original. But on this last rewatch last night, I do like it a lot more now, because it's not as it's still intense, and I still would prefer to watch the original, so I don't have to see some of those things, like Ileana Douglas getting her cheek bitten off.
Yeah.
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 But I do like it a lot more now than I used to.
Yeah, I mean, I think the differences in the performances, the difference in the way that Scorsese approaches the material, because for as much as I said, watching the original after being so familiar with the remake, I think impacted my experience because the beats were so similar. Even as we're talking about it and pointing out some of the differences between the two, I do think that they're two movies that can like coexist side by side. And if right. you want one experience, you can watch the original. If you want another experience, you can watch the remake, which is always, you know, kind of what you're after with. It doesn't completely reimagine the movie. It doesn't tell a totally different story. It doesn't change major character dynamics or events. You know, it tweaks things a little bit here and there, but you could realistically watch both and get two totally different experiences, which is really the goal of any remake.
That's exactly what I was thinking when I watched both of these so close together. I was like, yeah, this is the same movie, but it's a completely different feeling for both
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
So let me put you on the spot here, because it is remake day. What are some of your other favorite remakes?
Oh, no. Okay, like horror remakes? Those
are the ones that come to mind for me. Because yeah. But like just in general, even if they're not horror.
Let me see here. Probably some of my favorites, The Last House on the Left remake. Okay. I really enjoy that one. Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Evil Dead, definitely a good one. Maniac.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Let's see. You don't like Maniac?
I'm not as crazy about the Elijah Wood one, no. I don't know that I am on board with the gimmick.
I actually saw that before I saw the original. So. Okay. It was playing at Texas Frightmare Weekend. I think it premiered there.
Oh, okay.
And I just walked into it. I was like, I haven't seen the original, but I'm going to go check this out with the horror crowd. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Maybe just in that environment.
Sure.
But I did really enjoy the gimmick in that. So
okay.
I like it.
Yeah.
I'm actually, I had to look up online for it because there's so many. I forget, you know,
right.
certain ones.
Well, there's The Thing. There's The Fly.
Those are too obvious.
Right.
Obviously, everyone loves those. I do love The Fly. Is probably one of my favorites.
Yeah.
One of my favorite horror movies of all time.
The Blob. Are you a fan of The Blob remake?
Oh, yeah. Who's not?
It's because it's amazing.
That's right. True. Looking at some of these, like, no. One Missed Call, absolutely not.
Oh, I never saw it.
You don't have to.
No. Do you like the Hills Have Eyes remake?
I do, yeah.
That's a good one.
I like that one a lot. I like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake.
I am less crazy about that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, here's a controversial one.
Okay.
Fright Night.
I am not a fan of the Fright Night remake.
Well, again, it was one where I had only seen the original once.
Yeah.
Actually, when I saw the remake. Because it just, I don't know, it wasn't... It's a big horror movie, obviously, but it just wasn't one that I, like, grew up with, like everyone else did. So it wasn't, like, as near and dear to me as it was probably to everybody else. And when I watched the remake, I was like, yeah, this one's fun, too. Yeah.
I
don't mind it.
It has experienced a resurgence, like a lot of people, I think, like it. And I know it came up on the recent Shockwaves, and I got scared because I was like, uh-oh, this is the part where everybody decides, no, it's really good, and I'm still out here alone not really liking it. And I was relieved to hear that Ryan Turek backs me up.
That's fine. I actually haven't seen it again. So
no, I haven't either. I saw it the one time in the theater, and I have not seen it since. So it actually may be way better than I remember.
The one time I saw it, I had a good time with it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, what about other ones? Because I know, I listened to Elric and Brian on Screen Drafts when they were talking about remakes, and I know they mentioned Sorcerer.
That's an amazing one.
That's an amazing remake. Yeah. I love The Wages of Fear, but I mean, come on.
Right.
Sorcerer is amazing.
Yeah.
What else did they talk about? I forgot.
I don't remember what else they talked about. I like the Ocean's 11 remake.
I don't think I've seen that, to be honest with you.
The Steven Soderbergh one, really?
Yeah, I don't think I've seen... Maybe parts of it.
It's very fun.
I don't remember it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
That's a good one.
78, yep.
Yeah. I like... did you ever see Silent Night?
Yeah. The,
The Silent Night, Deadly Night sort of remake.
Yeah, what's his name? I like him. Stephen C. Miller?
Stephen C. Miller, yeah.
Did that...
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, me too.
That was fun.
That's kind of an underrated one.
Well, what's your favorite one then? Your favorite remake?
Yeah, mine are all the same. I mean, mine are all The Thing, The Fly, The Blob. I like the Hills Have Eyes one. I'm trying to think of some. I don't hate the Rob Zombie Halloween.
I don't hate it either.
All right, see? I'm trying to think of like a controversial one, but I don't... Like, I'm not crazy about the Friday the 13th. I'm not crazy about Nightmare on Elm Street. What are your feelings about the upcoming Child's Play?
And again, with a heavy sigh. I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, yeah. I'll go check it out.
Yeah.
But I'm not too confident. Can I just say I hate how Chucky looks? So much.
Yeah, I don't get it. I think the design
looks terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, the last trailer, I will say, gave me a little more hope than I had originally. There was nothing about it that interested me, but the main trailer that I just saw, I was kind of like, oh, that looks like it might be okay. And then Heather saw it and said she actually really liked it. So that gave me a boost of hope.
Really? I do like where they're going with it. I think that's a cool way to update the story.
Yeah.
Which is what a remake is supposed to do. So
right.
Like, I don't care. It's my favorite horror movie of all time. So it's always going to be there. I don't care that they're remaking it. And I do like where they're going with the story, but yeah, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
Kind of like when I saw the Carrie remake or Poltergeist, I was like, yeah, but they did this so much better before.
Right. Yeah, those are two that I forget existed, honestly. Like, every once in a while, I have to be reminded that they remade Poltergeist.
It wasn't horrible, and I liked parts of it.
Yeah, but... I forget that it exists. It just made very little impact on me, you know? And that's the thing. It's like, if you love a movie and they remake it, you know, like you said, it doesn't... Just because they're remaking Child's Play, it doesn't take away from the original Child's Play. So you can just ignore that it exists if you want to. I actually really like the Peter Jackson King Kong.
Yes, I do too. I think that's one I've only seen once.
Yeah.
Because it's like 4 hours long or something.
It is long.
But yeah, I did really enjoy that. I haven't seen any like King Kong. I haven't seen the original King Kong.
Oh, it's good. You should see. I don't think I'm saying anything new or interesting there. Oh, you should check out King Kong. It's this beloved classic that you should totally check
There's a lot of those I need to check out. Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
What am I even doing on the show? I'm going to go. I don't need to be here.
Nonsense. Anything else about Cape Fear that you wanted to mention?
Did we get into everything interesting about it?
I hope so. I think so. We jumped around all over the place. We ranked the Child's Play movies. So, you know, I feel like we covered everything.
Let me see. I have notes.
Oh,
I mean,
good.
Just read over my notes.
Way more prepared than me.
Well, I had to because I hadn't seen the remake in so long because I just avoided it. What about, okay, we didn't really talk much about the mom and the daughter in the remake.
Again, I like Juliette Lewis a lot, and I think Jessica Lange does what is asked of her, but I'm not crazy about the way they wrote that character.
Why? Because she's kind of loopy?
She's kind of loopy. She's, again, pitched at the same level as the rest of the movie, and I don't blame her in the scenes where she's, like, angry at Nick Nolte and slapping him, and, you know, because it's hinted that he has cheated on her in the past, and so their marriage is sort of hanging on by a thread. But I just think it informs all of their scenes together with a sort of, sometimes it almost feels like A Streetcar Named Desire when the two of them are on screen together, and I just think it's a little much.
But I think it was good that they gave them a little bit of something. They're having marriage problems.
Right.
You know, obviously. They're not a happy couple, I think. Do you think that was a better dynamic to explore than just, you know, happily married husband and wife? Or to be like, okay, we're going to give these people problems and then really test them to see if they can work past that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they were trying to do, but I don't know how much the introduction of Max Cady into their dynamic tests their marriage any further. It's almost like they're having all these problems, and then Max Cady comes along, and it's the thing that unites them, as opposed to being something that further tests their marriage. So it's a weird choice to make. Not that I mean, I could almost see it, a similar scene within the theater, but with Jessica Lange instead of Juliette Lewis, and that almost makes more sense in terms of what they set up versus what they accomplish. So it's... Again, I like the idea of making them more flawed. I'm more interested in that version of the story. I know you're not as maybe interested in that, those dynamics.
No, that is a part about the remake that I like.
Okay.
That the wife and the daughter are fleshed out a lot more.
Definitely.
Yeah. And it's kind of mostly focused on Sam in the original, and they're just kind of there. Like, they're his motivation for doing all this. And in this one, they're actually... characters.
Right.
Which is always good.
Well, and I'm torn because Sam in the original isn't much of a character. He's sort of still playing Atticus Finch. He's great because he's Gregory Peck and he's just sort of upstanding and decent and good. There's a little bit of, you know, wearing that away because by the end of the movie he's sort of plotting to kill Max Cady and how can I get away with it? And so that's kind of interesting. I don't know how gradual that decay is. It's sort of like, and then all of a sudden he decides he's going to do this. And I like making Sam a little bit more human and flawed in the remake. The problem is I don't really like Sam Bowden in the remake, and I like Sam Bowden in the original.
Why don't you like him in the remake?
I just think he's kind of sucky. I don't know.
He is.
Yeah, I'm just not really a fan of him as a human being.
He's kind of skeezy.
Yeah. And honestly, Nick Nolte is an actor who has to be in the right part for me to get on board. I'm not automatically in on Nick Nolte. And so if it's like Nick Nolte in Extreme Prejudice, okay, I'm on board for Nick Nolte. If it's Nick Nolte in Cape Fear, he's going to have to work a little harder to win me over, and he never quite does.
That's fair. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But I think Sam in the original, I think he does have kind of an interesting downward spiral almost, because, you know, he's a lawyer and he knows what he can and can't do, and he has to make the choice of just what he's going to do to protect his family. You know, he does have that morality clash within himself, which I think is interesting. And I think it's even more interesting because, like you said, by the end of the movie, you know, he's set up this whole plot to lure Katie up to the houseboat where he's got his wife and kid. He's using them as bait, basically, to lure him up there so that he will do something and then he will kill him.
Right.
But then at the end, he doesn't.
Yeah, that was a big change, too, between the original and the remake, is the way that it ends.
And that's the only time, do you know, that's the only time that you see Katie actually looking scared.
Yeah.
Is at the end when Sam has the choice to shoot him and he doesn't. Like, him not killing him is what scares him, because he knows, like, he's got him now because he killed Kursik.
Right.
So he's got him for murder now, so he's going to put him in prison forever. And that's what scares him most of all, is, like, going back in prison. Not just because, you know, he's in prison, but because he won't be out to be free to do basically what he's been doing the whole movie, you know?
Right.
He likes to taunt people and torment people and just, like, have fun and play with them like, you know, they're little pawns of his. And that's what scares him, that he's not going to have the freedom to do that.
Yeah.
Because he's just that kind of evil character. That's what makes him happy. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
Yeah, it's a
day. It really hit home this last time I watched it, like, an hour ago. I was like, oh, okay, I see it in his face now. That's why he's so scared.
Yeah.
And I loved that. Whereas, you know, in the remake, we just get him singing as he's driving.
He's shouting in tongues. Come on. I should have turned the subtitles on just to see what they wrote.
Oh, it didn't say anything. I had subtitles.
Oh, damn it.
It just said speaking in gibberish.
How much you want to bet that's another, like, De Niro improvisation?
Or was he even really saying anything?
Well, right.
If
yeah,
he actually researched something to say. Or
probably.
Like, la, 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 la.
Knowing him, he spent 6 months inside of, like, a Pentecostal snake-charming church just, like, learning how to speak in tongues for 10 seconds as he dies in Cape Fear.
You know. And that scene, too, on the boat where he's trying Sam, you know, quote marks, in court before his wife and daughter for what he did. I think that scene, that gets too comical when he, you know, turns to the camera and makes, like, those funny comments. Like, I'm sorry, Your Honor, that was very aggressive.
Right.
And stuff. So I think this is another, I don't mean to, like, keep harping on things I don't like about the remake. But I think, like I said, the subtlety is what I enjoy about the original. And this one, I think it's sometimes it's too crazy to be believed.
Yeah.
Where in the original, I believe that this could really happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. It does play much more sort of in the real world than the remake does. But thank you very much for talking about these movies. It was super fun.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm glad we got to, and I'm glad it was my excuse to finally see the original Cape Fear.
Yes, I'm so glad you saw it, and yeah, I mean, you liked it, right?
I did like it, of course, yes. If okay. It sounded like I didn't.
I can really tell from
no,
here.
No, sorry. I definitely did like it. It's a weird thing to watch it, A, knowing that I have to podcast on it, and B, with the remake so fresh in my head that, like, there's just so many other things swimming around in my brain as I'm watching it that I almost can't enjoy it as a movie. I think I need to watch it again just to, like, enjoy it as a movie and not as, like, homework that I'm doing, if that makes sense.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Where can people find you online?
Well, if you want to come talk to me, just find me on Twitter @MichelleLynnAiken. Okay. I also write sometimes at F this movie. Hey.
Yeah, you do. What's
yeah,
up?
Yeah, I do.
Anyway, yeah, we're always posting every day at fthismovie.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at fthismovie, or you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Please keep those June Splitation reviews and hashtags coming on Twitter. It's been super, super fun, and I hope everybody's watching some cool stuff. Next week, I don't know what we're doing, but we will be back. And thanks again, Michelle. This was awesome.
Yeah, thank you. This was fun.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.